Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to NJSBA's Blog Talk Radio Show, Conversations on New Jersey Education, a show dedicated to creating a conversation among those of us in the education community and beyond on the important education issues of the day. A conversation that brings state leaders to you, and I hope that you all feel free to join in on the conversation. My name is Ray Pinney, and I will be your host this afternoon for a special edition of Conversations on New Jersey Education. We'll be talking about the school breakfast program. We will not only be taking your calls, but we also have the chat room open. I think this will give you another vehicle in which to participate. Our guest today, and I'm not sure if they're here yet, is Secretary of Agriculture Douglas Fisher. Douglas, are you here with us?
I'm here.
Okay.
Good morning. Good morning.
I was guessing. I saw the number there. And also with us is Rose Tricario, and she's the Secretary in Division. She's the Division of Food and Nutrition Director. Are you with us?
Yep, here I am, Ray. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. I'm going to let you guys start off, but I also want to introduce that some other people just wanted to call in and reemphasize what the Secretary and Rose will be talking about. And we have Sharon Sauer from NJSBA's Governmental Relations, who's been working on this issue on behalf of NJSBA. Sharon, welcome.
Thank you.
And we also have someone from Washington calling in, Madeline Levine, and she's with the Senior Policy Food Research and Action Center. Madeline, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we get started into this, Secretary, we're going to be talking about school breakfast program. Why is the Department of Agriculture involved in this?
Well, the Department of Agriculture administers the USDA program through our school system, through our Food and Nutrition Division, who Rose Tricario is the director here. So we're one of only three states in the country that have it set up that way, Florida, Texas, and New Jersey.
Oh, that's interesting. And how do the other states do? Do they do it through the Department of Education?
Most generally, yes.
Okay.
There's actually some folks, frankly, Florida has just started that. They called us and asked us for some guidance on how they might affect that. So I think you'll probably see some more departments in the future do that.
Okay. Rose, in New Jersey, hundreds of thousands of students participate in a free and reduced lunch program, but not many, but a significant number do not participate in a school breakfast program. What's the participation rate in New Jersey?
Well, Ray, that is correct. And actually, only 37% of the economically disadvantaged students who regularly consume school lunch also participate in the breakfast program in New Jersey. So we do have a vast number that are not reached with this program at this time.
How many students are we talking about participate in the free and reduced lunch program?
What I will tell you in terms of the breakfast program is, for example, in New Jersey, we have about 687,000 students that eat school lunch. However, only 192,000 of those students are eating school breakfast. So there is a big difference with the number of students that we are able to reach.
Actually, that's one of the reasons why we're glad that you're hosting this podcast today, because we've had some recent developments that are going to, we think, increase participation greatly. We've started already that trend, but we had some developments with a partnership with the Department of Education and some joint communications with school boards, which I think they received a letter on January 17th. That should dramatically change that number.
Yeah, I believe we posted that letter in our school board notes newsletter for the members to read, and it did go out. Why is it important to get more people involved in this, Secretary?
Well, all you have to do is see a child come to school hungry and be asked to be expected to perform when, in fact, they have no nutrition at all, and they start their day. So it's important because tests have shown. I don't care where you study, or what you study, certainly if they have proper nourishment, they can achieve better results. And so it's important that our kids get to start the day off right, whether for a whole host of reasons. One, they may have not had the opportunity at home to even have breakfast, or just because of timing and two parents working and trying to get the kid off to school, that in fact, they even though they may have should have had the opportunity, it doesn't happen. So it's from every indication, I think it shows that it's important for children to have nourishment.
Madeline, from the national perspective, I guess, is there anything you want to add to the importance of a school breakfast program?
Well, I think the secretary really summed it up really well. There's a lot of research that shows that kids do so much better when they eat breakfast, a healthy breakfast at school each day, just as they're able to do through the school breakfast program that Rose is doing a great job running in New Jersey. When kids can get a healthy, balanced meal right at the beginning of the school day, research shows that they have better test scores, better behavior, fewer nurses' visits, better attendance, and also that they are less likely to be overweight or obese. Because eating breakfast each morning is a really healthy habit that helps prevent problems related to poor diet.
Rose, how do we compare with other states in that participation rate?
Well, recently the Food Research and Action Center ranked New Jersey 48th in the nation in school breakfast participation. We're just ahead of Iowa, Utah, and Nevada. The District of Columbia ranks first in the nation in participation, and again, that ranking is based on what I mentioned to you earlier, that only 37% of economically disadvantaged students that consume school lunch participate in the breakfast program.
Why do districts not participate in this, do you think?
Well, there's a whole host of reasons. Districts have different barriers. There's definitely not a one-size-fits-all model for districts to follow. The different barriers that we have been told of include the, busing schedules, getting students to school on time in order to have breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bigger barriers that we feel as though we have addressed was the instructional time piece. And as you know, Secretary Fisher and Acting Commissioner Cerf co-authored a letter to schools encouraging increased participation in the breakfast program by serving breakfast in the classroom.
Well, let me just add that, obviously our ranking is 48th, so we would be considered failing in that realm. And because, as Rose said, there were barriers, but a lot of them were barriers that were misconstrued or misconceived. And we're showing the way to break down what people thought were obstacles really aren't there. Just today, we were at a school where, for the first time since October, they just started the program. The kids have breakfast in the classroom. It was one of the greatest demonstrations I've seen of something that works really well. And we have those examples across the state. So we're thrilled for the opportunity to talk today to the school boards across the state to encourage them, to get the answers, to find out, they think it can't be done, they think it can't be paid for properly, they're not sure about sanitation, they're not sure about disruption, they're questioning whether or not it takes away from instructional time, as Rose mentioned, and all those things are, frankly, miscues that we know that there's a great desire on the part of the legislature. There's a great desire when we ask parents and guardians across the state, do you want it to become available? We know that, and that's why we're thrilled to be able to work with the school boards.
So a lot of times, I guess if I'm hearing you correctly, a lot of the assumptions for not participating are based on older information or maybe even misconstrued information.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the letter, by the way, the letter, though, was not – that letter was a big deal because – and we're so appreciative of the Department of Education for jointure with that, because that was one of the perceived barriers. They thought it would take away from their time, instructional time, so they weren't willing to do it in many schools. But obviously, that we've crossed that hurdle.
Sharon, I know you've been involved from the association's point of view in trying to work with other education groups to get this word out. What's the group that you've been working with?
there's an assortment of education associations that are involved, Ray. PSA is involved. ASA is also involved. And then, of course, we're working with the other associations as well, the American Dairy Council, the ACNJ, which is the Advocates for Children of New Jersey, and then and Madeline's association is FRAC, and then the Coalition of Anti-Hunger. And also, I should just mention that I went into Vineland's school this week and got a complete tour of how the breakfast program works. And they started their program last January, and they started it with one school. Now they're up to 8 schools. They're serving K to 8, and they're serving 4,800 students.
Wow.
So they've made some rapid growth in that year, in that time. And he explained to me that they have different schedule, different options for different schedules. If the kids are coming by car, they come into the cafeteria and get their breakfast, and they have like 10 to 15 minutes to eat it. And if they're coming in by bus, they come in a little bit later. So he lines the bag breakfast up on a table in the cafeteria, and they just grab it and go, which is one of the options that was stated in the letter. And then they eat it, eat on their way to their first period class.
So it looks very possible in that district, at least.
Yeah, Ray, this is Madeline. If I could just jump in and just say what we're talking about is that the old-fashioned way of doing breakfast in the cafeteria before the start of school, where kids actually have to get to school early in order to take part in the meal, it's just not working well. There are just too many kids that are missing it, either because they want to stay out on the playground, because they're stuck on their school bus somewhere, because they woke up late and they just didn't get to school early. And so by creating these other options where schools can let kids eat as they get settled in their classroom at the beginning of the day, it just makes it so much more convenient and accessible to so many more kids. And these are the programs that we're talking about. And schools, even though they are concerned about some of the barriers that the secretary mentioned, what they find is when they try it, they love it, and that a lot of their fears were unfounded, and they can really overcome, you know, anytime you change something in a school building, it can cause a few waves, but once you get used to it, it just runs really smoothly.
And by the way, it's not I'm sorry. I was just going to say, it's not all or nothing. In other words, you can go in a classroom and see 50% of the children having breakfast and the other half are just sitting at their desk doing something else. And in a lot of these classrooms, they incorporate that very well because the students, the guardian or parent or grandparent opts in, and they can opt in. They can opt in for the, you know, at any point, or opt out.
Rose, we haven't heard from you in a while. I know I saw, and I think it was in the letter and also some other areas, you give school districts different ways of incorporating this. What are some, I know Madeline just mentioned a couple, but is there some creative ways to get this going? And I guess I should be clear, if my understanding is correct, you can do this during instructional time. So it's not like a lunch period. You can do it during a period one or whatever, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, Ray, one of the things that I think is vitally important in the success of this program is engaging the entire school community, because that's how you're going to get success in this. Food service operators need to communicate with the building administration, with the parents, with the students, with the faculty, and everybody needs to be on board with this. As far as the different creative ways to implement such a program, we've heard from different food service directors that have had different success stories that they've shared. The breakfast in the classroom model has certainly been the one where we've seen the best participation. For example, in the West New York School District, they began serving breakfast in the classroom this year and saw more than a 700% increase in participation over last year.
Wow.
You know, in addition, you know, they did report that fewer students were going to the nurse's office complaining of headaches or stomach aches. You know, and the faculty are reporting that there is definitely less class time lost because the students are present. But in terms of actually implementing the program, you know, communicating with all the parties that are involved makes it a success. The food service operators have knowledgeable staff that can work with faculty in getting the food to the classrooms, in getting rosters checked off so that we are, you know, correctly recording the students that are participating, but most importantly is working with everyone involved.
Okay, we're talking about the school breakfast program. If anyone, listener has a question and they want to call in, you dial 1-347-989-8904. 1-347-989-8904 and press 1, and that'll let our switchboard operator know that you have a question.
Ray, can I chime in there for a minute?
Sure, Sharon.
I wanted to talk about the menu. I found it really interesting in Vineland that they actually are baking the goods on the premises in Vineland. They're actually making muffins. Each day is a different menu. So 3 days a week they get assorted muffins, a piece of fruit and milk, or they'll get a cereal, a box of cereal and milk and fruit, or they'll get a cereal bar, depending, but they never keep it the same thing so the kids don't get bored with it. And he did reiterate the fact that now that the kids are used to the menu, you might have more kids grab breakfast on a certain day knowing what the menu is than on another day. But for the most part, I mean, they're all running in there to get their breakfast.
Oh, that's good.
Excuse me, if I could just add to that. You know, there are additional options for schools that don't have such a facility where they could prepare things like that. You know, we do have districts like Vineland that have the facilities whereby they can bake things fresh, but there are things also different manufacturers have brought into the marketplace, prepackaged meal that includes, you know, the bread grain option, the fruits, and the components of the meal that make it a very quick, easy serve, kind of like a grab-and-go type of a thing, which is also easy to do in the classroom setting.
I'm not sure if it's Secretary or Rose who answered this question. Is there a cost to the district to getting this started, or the administrative cost of some sort?
Well, the district is going to make the decision to do it, and the only thing I can tell you is that they are reimbursed by the federal government for the cost of the goods. How they implement it in the school, there's, you know, I'm sure there's some sort of a cost, but always encourage and have experienced is that they do it with existing staff. There's not any staff that needs to be added.
So it's just changing your structure a little bit to fit it into the normal school day?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Rose, do you have anything to add on to that?
Well, and by the way, obviously, anytime you make a culture change or any kind of, you know, there'll be some folks that'll say that it's, you know, it's very cumbersome and expensive, but frankly, we've seen it over and over again. Did it work? You know, they can manage to incorporate it and not find themselves incurring additional costs.
And also to add to what Secretary explained, you know, going back to the point I made earlier about getting all members of the school community involved, I did witness one district, I believe in Seaside, where the students were actually part of the process in getting the meals to the classroom. So, you know, the cost again is it's not going to be a one size fits all model. You know, depending upon what the district has available as its resources in-house, as well as the existing equipment that the cafeteria may have, all of those things could be incorporated into the breakfast program.
If a district is looking to start a school breakfast program, how would they go about it? Should they call your division or what should be the, or the Department of Ed? How should they go about doing it?
Well, the Division of Food and Nutrition is here to help anybody that's interested. So I think the first step, if someone is looking to expand their nutrition program and implement breakfast, they can call the Division of Food and Nutrition. And that number is 609-984-0692. And a child nutrition specialist would be able to answer the questions they have and help provide the resources that they need to get their program started.
Sharon, excuse me, the other groups that you talked about, that the other education groups that are working with on this issue, are they all supportive of increasing this participation?
Oh, definitely. The first meeting that I attended, it was Chris Emigaltz was there from the Department of Education, Jennifer was there from PSA, and Tom Dunn was there from ASA. So definitely they're all on board. We're all trying to contribute ideas and information to the group, because there's different entities that you would want to approach in order to, you know, achieve the goal. And the goal with this group is to increase participation in the school districts. So any way that we can, that any of these agencies can help, it is appreciated. And actually, when that letter came through, our way of helping was that we posted the letter. We posted an article about the letter and about the group in our School Board Notes newsletter. So that went out right away as soon as that letter came. And, that brings attention. And then, of course, the letter did go to all the districts. So it's all this information going out is now going to places where we know that somebody's going to pay attention to it.
I guess this goes to the secretary. Are we missing out on some funds from the federal government by not participating in this?
There's about $25 or $27 million laying on the table down in Washington, waiting to come to New Jersey to reimburse the school districts that have not taken advantage of these funds. So that's a pretty simple answer. I mean, the money's there, and every school has the opportunity to participate. It's just a question of whether they have the desire and the wherewithal to start, going down that path.
I guess I also understand that this week is National School Breakfast Week, and I guess the point of that is to make the school districts aware of this. Is that my assumption correct on that one?
Yes. I mean, basically, it's a campaign to increase exposure. I mean, I don't care who you ask, but ask us just a passerby in the street or someone from the highest halls of learning, or anywhere in between. So do you think it's a good idea if kids have breakfast in the morning, or should they go to school and not be nourished? I mean, the answer, I've never heard anyone answer anything different than, yeah, it's really important. So the next part is, why isn't it being done? New Jersey's the worst. You know, we're 48th. Our rank is 48th. And so we want to get the word out that there are lots of opportunities now. Because it's a pretty straight line between the Department of Health, the Children and Family Services, Department of Education, the Department of Agriculture. We're all in line. We all are saying the same thing, and we're all there to help facilitate whatever barriers, perceived or real, are there, and to start a program.
Madeline, from the national perspective, is the barriers that we see in New Jersey, are they the same barriers that other states see and have overcome?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of commonality. I mean, we see schools all over the country making these changes, and I think that when we do our look at breakfast participation and look at these programs, what we're seeing is that schools with high percentages of low-income kids can really afford to do this, and that the good school finances fall in line with a breakfast program that has a high participation rate. And because of the federal funding that the secretary was talking about that exists for schools all across the country, there is a steady funding source. And the key is to have an efficient program where you aren't having a lot of staff producing a small number of meals or serving a small number of kids. So that's why we find all across the country that when the programs have high participation, that they actually can sustain themselves so that it's really a win-win for everyone.
So you probably have to have a certain demographic, though, in your district to have this sustainable, right? You need to have a certain percentage of students on the free and reduced to qualify for that?
Well, I think it's sustainable everywhere. If, I think Rose probably can talk about the finances in New Jersey the best, but if you want to be able to provide meals at no charge to all the kids, then you need to have a certain demographic. But if your program is still charging families for meals that don't qualify for free and reduced, I think it can be done at any demographic, don't you, Rose?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. The demographic of the city in which, or the town in which the breakfast program is implemented, really, I think, is irrelevant to the fact that it can be sustainable. You know, the federal reimbursement, you know, like Secretary Fisher was saying, the federal funding is out there, and the breakfast is 100% federally funded. The level of reimbursement can cover all costs of the program. You know, the cost of each individual breakfast to the child is going to be zero, obviously, if they are eligible for free lunch. So whatever their paying status is for the meals would be consistent with the breakfast program, and the federal funding is there even for those that are not.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, it really is not much different in the free and reduced lunch in terms of how you participate in terms of the students participating. You know, so it's really not that difficult a lift.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm trying to understand why people aren't doing it.
Well, you know, something that's interesting to point out, Ray. You know, we have schools that are serving breakfast that are not mandated to serve breakfast. However, New Jersey does require that schools that have 20% or more students eligible for free and reduced price lunch, that they provide a breakfast program. What's interesting to note is that even schools that do not have a breakfast program have gotten into a habit of serving breakfast on testing days. So it's obvious to us that there is recognition of the importance of having breakfast, you know, to have increased performance and better testing scores in the school, you know, so the importance of it is recognized.
That is interesting because I just went through that this week with my daughter taking the HESPA test. They did that exact thing. She said, "I don't need breakfast today, Dad. They're serving breakfast."
Say no
school.
More. There you are.
What was that?
I say no more. That's pretty interesting. I mean, you witnessed it for yourself. And I think it just demonstrates the value of making sure that they get breakfast.
What else? I guess this would go to the secretary. If we want to start get the word out, what more can we do to help this cause?
I'm sorry.
What more can we do? If a district's interested, or what can the associations do to help get the word out about this? I guess this would take place if they're trying to do it this year, it would be for next year, right?
Yeah, if schools wanted to implement a breakfast program, I mean, first of all, there's really no there's no rule that says you must start in September, you must start next school year. If somebody called our office and said they wanted to start, you know, next month, we would work with them to get them the resources, you know, point them to the places on our website, possibly help them to network with another district that's already doing it, that's shown success. So there's really no, you know, rule as to you must start at this time of the year. Anybody can start at any time.
Madeline, I was interested that we had the school breakfast program during instructional time. Was there resistance to this when that idea first came up?
You mean way back, like in 1965, when it first started? I think that people, you know, kind of in the old-fashioned, you know, Leave It to Beaver sort of world, you know, 1950s America, there was this idea that, you know, mom was at home and she was going to make breakfast and everyone was going to sit around the table and have breakfast before they go off on their day. But I think the reality of 21st century living in this country is that virtually all families, both parents work, people have really hectic schedules. Many families have to work multiple jobs to make ends meet. So parents have really long working hours and really long commutes in many parts of New Jersey, especially with people going long distances even into New York City. So I think that, or Philadelphia. So the idea that people have the time to eat breakfast, it's just not there anymore. And what we find, in fact, with looking at research about Americans' eating habits is that only 30% or less of kids, 30% of school-age kids eat breakfast at home with their families, and the numbers drops off considerably with teenagers. And adults don't always do the best job with eating breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the if there has been some resistance, but that now people are really realizing that this is too important a meal to let kids miss. And that just like on test days, the kids will learn better every day. And by doing, by making the breakfast more accessible and easy for kids to grab and consume, that you're really making sure that kids have the best chance to succeed academically. And it really levels the playing field for kids that do live in food insecure households where their families don't have enough food resources. And when you have a culture in school where all the kids are eating together, it takes away some of that stigma that can exist when breakfast is just, you know, for the poor kids in the cafeteria before school. And when it's something that everybody does, it encourages everybody to have that healthy habit. So I think that we are making a culture shift, and that there is some resistance to that, but it's just the reality of family life today that that we don't have the time to sit around and the breakfast table in most of our households.
I guess, Rose, we're talking mostly about the academic benefits of this, but I assume we just touch on that there's a health benefit for the kids too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, increasing participation is ultimately about the kids. You know, it's about their health, their ability to succeed in life, and the habits that they learn in school are things that are going to last them a lifetime. It's going to affect their future. It's going to, you know, help them to make better choices as they grow up into the adults. And the variety of foods that they get at school, learning to eat from the different food groups, all of these, you know, students coming to school are learning from an academic perspective, but also the nutrition education that they take with them is vitally important to their success. You know, I think as I think Madeline mentioned earlier, the obesity rate is such a factor now, and it's been shown that those that eat breakfast have a less likely chance of becoming obese adults.
That's interesting. All right, we'll be winding down now. Go around.
You know, Ray, can I?
I'm just going to go to you, okay? Sure.
I just want to emphasize on the menu that when the food service director in Vineland talked to me, he said, you know, how they have to choose all whole grain products, or they have to make whole grain. Everything is followed by a certain guideline so that you are eating healthier, not so much that you're just eating breakfast, but you're eating a healthy breakfast. And that, you know, that was very, very important on that fact.
That is, yes, you're not just putting in empty calories.
Right.
All right, we'll go around and get some final thoughts. Madeline, do you want to give us any final things that we haven't touched on?
Well, I just really want to commend the commission, the Agriculture Commissioner, the Department of Education for working together on this initiative. It's really exciting. The New Jersey Anti-Hunger Network and the Advocates for Children are really excited for joining forces with all the education groups to make sure that we really do increase the health and the educational outcomes of the kids of New Jersey. Like Rose said, it's really about the kids.
Okay, Rose, you have any final thoughts?
No, I think, you know, in echoing what everyone else said, we need to keep the children in the forefront of this discussion. You know, they are our future. And by providing them with healthy meals at school, we are doing them a service that's going to last them a lifetime.
Sharon, did you have any final thoughts?
No, but it's great to talk with all of you. And I think we meet next, you know, this group meets, we're meeting monthly, and, you know, we're trying to make as much progress as possible.
Okay, Secretary, I'm going to let you have the last word. It looks like you have a good coalition. You have people from all the education groups. You have the Commissioner of Education working with you. So it looks like you'll probably have, you should have success.
Absolutely. We're thrilled about all our partners and working together. And I can't, you know, we can't list them all here. There's certainly a tremendous amount of folks that want to see this take place. And I guess what I would say, my parting words would be, just be that we are available. We're a resource. We want to make sure that we make the transition for you, all the school boards across the state, as easy as can, you know, make it happen. And we're looking forward to working with each and every school district in the state to start their program.
You know, before we go to a close, Rose, you had a phone number that you mentioned earlier about if the district was interested in starting this. Could you get that number again?
Yes, it's 609-984-0692. And in addition to that, we also have resources on the Department of Agriculture's website under the Division of Food and Nutrition that schools can look at to help them get their program started.
Great, great. Okay, that brings us to the end of another Conversations on New Jersey Education. I hope you all enjoyed this and found it informative. I'd like to thank Secretary of Agriculture Douglas Fisher. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ray.
And I'd also like to thank Rose Chicario. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you, Ray.
And Madeline Levine, thank you.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
And Sharon, obviously, thank you.
You're
welcome. I'll see you later,
Ray.
Too.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you all for joining. And if you have any questions or comments, please contact me, rpinney@njsb.org, for future programs and shows. Thank you. And that'll be the end of our show.